We should go boldly where man has not gone before. Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there? Well, the universe put it there. If you choose, God put it there.
Maybe for us to go and see. This photograph indicates?
No, it's the other one on the other page.
We'll get to that in a moment. Let's hear from... let's go back to July 1969 one more moment, because I want to share with you the conversation that you had.
Welcome, Red Eyes members. Thank you for tuning in to this second hour. It's great to have you with us, and we are continuing our conversation with Freeman. We have so much to talk about here in the second hour. I want to, first of all, go through some stuff in regards to pharaohs, Obama, and the kind of Egyptian connection again, and then we're going to bring up some interesting stuff about Phobos, the Stargate Atlantis connection, and I want to get into this idea about the underground minerals and stones, crystals and whatnot as well, the idea about the technological connection to all this stuff. But Freeman, let's begin talk about the technology of the pharaohs. I've heard this idea that the mummification process actually preserves the cell structure in one way. We had this news a while back from, I think it was New York Times or Washington Times that talked about that they've successfully managed to take a cell from one of the mummies pretty much, and that could potentially be used for cloning. So the question here that comes in regards to what we talked about in the first hour, the resemblance between Obama, Akhenaten, Michelle, Nefertiti, and so forth, and their kids, of course. So the question is Obama a clone?
That is the question, isn't it? You know, when I was covering this whole idea of Obama being a clone, and also the idea that I had already outlined that he would not be an American citizen, you know, now when they're coming up with these birth certificate questions, I'm like, well, that's because he was grown in a lab. It is absolutely possible, and you will find it in the New York Times from April of 1985, where they have extracted DNA from a 2,400-year-old mummy, and that it did have a proper DNA for cloning. And the ability to reproduce DNA from an ancient source is expected to be a powerful new aid to archaeology, they say. So this was Dr. Paabo that had managed to pull this off, a Swedish scientist.
A Swedish one,
take
huh?
It. Yes.
There we go. They're at it again. And this was back in 80, what did you say, 81? 85. Okay. And so what we can surmise from that is that they probably would have this technology way, way sooner than we heard about it, or way earlier, I should say, than we find out about it. So, again, if we tie this back to Obama, then could it be that he has some kind of... a genetic freaking experiment here in some way that they're trying to bring back the essence, if you will, of Akhenaten?
Well, you know, the Obama campaign seems to fall right into play with the whole Akhenaten story, with the creation of a singular religion, the unification of the world, as it were. Akhenaten was considered the first internationalist and, you know, the creator of monotheism. Sigmund Freud believed that he was Moses.
That's right.
And so we have this whole idea of this creation of a new religion, a new world religion, which is what we're watching happen on the world stage. You know, and the Pope has even come out and said, well, first of all, Benjamin Foons, the main astronomer of the Vatican, is saying that aliens are space brothers and they don't suffer original sin because they weren't born of Eve. Now, when the Vatican comes out and says aliens exist and there are space brothers, should we not take this into account? And then the Pope comes out and says, well, there is a new form of eugenics in designer babies. So when a lot of people are looking at Akhenaten and his very different type of artwork that he brought out when he took over, and showing himself as, you know, a very strange looking figure. He had a very strange body, and they're trying to say he had Marfan syndrome, and so Akhenaten looked strange because he had this disease. But if you look into Marfan syndrome, you'll find that it actually creates retardation. And so therefore, this was not a man who was the, you know, first individual, the first internationalist, the creator of a new religion and an empire, obviously was not retarded. So Marfan's does not fit the bill. I'm sorry. I do have a doctor, Dr. Earl Jones, who is saying that, that Akhenaten was a Palladian. And that's a pretty interesting tale. I cover that on Radio Freeman if you want to get into that. It's also on the video. If you get in the video, Obama Cloning in the Coming Space, where I included 10 hours of radio interviews, two of which are with you. Mm-hmm. And then I also, all of these other things that we're talking about are all included. And I do intend to complete this story because it does go off planet. It does go to Mars. It does include these giant craft. So I haven't finished the Obama story yet. It's only halfway done.
There you go. And then we have this, sorry to cut you off for him. I just want to squeeze in there that we have this, well, it's from a kind of humorous perspective, obviously, but I think he made some comment about that he's from Krypton or something, right?
That's right. And not only that, but outlining that his father, Jor-El, had sent him here to save planet Earth.
Oh, God. You know?
So he's playing the role to a T, is he not?
He's definitely doing that. That's right. That's just incredible. And then, you know, this other idea about some of the other surrounding symbolism. I mean, you've looked at that and we've talked a little bit about it. The way he brings out the logo and all this stuff, you know, the rising sun, even the guy who designed that team, I put up the video, that was quite a while ago now on Red Ice, but it's designed by a guy called Sol Sender, which is pretty much, well, sun is the name in Latin, is soul. You know, we up here, we even say for the sun, we say soul for the sun. So Sol Sender is the one who brings the sun to the people, right? The message of Obama here, of being this pretty much Akhenaten type figure, the all-seeing disc of the sun, the rays of the sun, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's curious, too, because I was thinking about that when Obama went down to Mexico right before the swine flu broke. And he went down and he met with Felipe Solis. All right. So we're back to Solis and Sol. And then, of course, the president of Mexico, Felipe Calderon. And the man, Felipe Solis, who was the museum curator, the very first man to shake Obama's hand in Mexico, then died either 14 hours later of the swine flu or a week later, depending on which news source you use. Really? I actually found one news source with both, saying that he died 14 hours later and saying that he died a week later in the same article.
So, okay.
Kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know, they can't quite keep their story straight, just like the BBC reporting Building 7 falling before it did, right?
That's right, that's right. Huh.
So this seems to be all written. So then I started to look into Felipe Solis and Felipe Calderon, who Felipe Calderon, of course, received a 1959 copy of 1984 from the Queen.
God,
if the Queen ever gave me a copy of 1984, I would feel doomed. you know?
That's right.
But you take these names, and Felipe, the original Philip, is Philip of Macedonia, which is the one-eyed king. And if you understand the Muslim perspective, then the one-eyed king is the Antichrist, is this Djinn or Jinn. And so then that's where Philip or Felipe comes in. But then Solis and Calderon is you can translate that through etymology to solar chalice. Hmm. So we're talking about like a Holy Grail sort of scenario.
Oh, interesting. So that's when he's go down to Mexico, and then you have maybe then Obama's this kind of, as you mentioned before, this great unifier or uniter in that sense, and it seems to be that they're trying to push for the whole you know, unification of America, of course, North American Union, all that stuff. And then he went over to those before he was elected, went over to Germany doing his talk in front of the Victory Column. He went to see, after he was elected, seeing the Queen, and there was some interesting stuff there as well in regards to the treatment, I guess, of between the relationship, I should say, between the Queen and Michelle Obama, isn't that right?
That's right. Now, at the Berlin, right there is the Temple of Zeus. They have the throne of Zeus that Hitler brought in at that Victory Square. And Obama did go visit the throne of Zeus before leaving Berlin. And then when he had his inauguration, they basically recreated this throne room of Zeus for his inauguration. So there is that connection as well. But yes, what had happened was in the G20 summit, the only people to be invited to visit the Queen from the G20 summit were the Obamas. And when they met each other, they shared some interesting gifts again. And I've been, you know, databasing these gifts they've been giving. And of course, they gave the Queen an iPod with her visit, video of her visit to America on it. And then the Queen gave the Obamas autographed pictures of herself, as per usual. But the curious thing was that when Michelle Obama went up to the Queen put her arm around Michelle.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people think it was the other way around, that Michelle put her arm around the Queen. But no, I double-checked this to make sure that it was the Queen that initiated contact. Now, what makes this so spectacular is that this has never happened before, and there are a lot of nevers that have happened before that I've been covering along the way in symbolic gestures. The Pope taking W to St. John's Tower on Friday the 13th. This has never happened, the visit at St. John's Tower. And let's not forget that W also went and did a ritual with the Mayans right before I did. So, there's a bit of connections there. I'll be getting into all of that later. So when the Queen initiated this contact and put her arm around Michelle Obama, this has never happened before because the Queen is considered sovereign. She's considered God. She is the head of everything. She is the ultimate ruling power. You do not touch her. But she touched Michelle. Now, being that this has never happened before, you might want to take into consideration that who I am saying Michelle Obama is the clone of is Akhenaten's mother, who is known as Queen Ti. And Queen Ti was more likely the source of this monotheistic religion than Akhenaten himself. Hmm. Because Akhenaten was a child when he became pharaoh, and Queen Ti was the overlord. She was actually the co-regent at the time and really running Egypt. So Queen Ti comes from an interesting race, which is the first Egyptian Hebrew bloodline. So that's where we get this idea of the Hyksos kings, or the idea of the Egyptian Hebrew bloodline. When you start to take this in, and we covered this last time, when you shift the Egyptian pharaohs to the biblical patriarchs, and you start with Abraham as Amenhotep, and you just take it down from there, then you find that they actually all correlate. Yeah. That probably, and more likely, according to like Ralph Ellis and Michael Tsarian, that the biblical patriarchs are actually Egyptian pharaohs.
Yeah, yeah.
So Queen Ti was a major player as in being this first introduction to the Hebrew. She was also Asian from her father Yuya, who some believe is Joseph. She was this original new bloodline, this Hyksos or Hebrew-Egyptian bloodline. And therefore, she becomes the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of Queen Elizabeth.
That's right. Because they all trace back their own genealogy to many of these the pharaohs. And there has been research on this. And do you think that that's why also they're so interested in digging in the genealogy, so to speak, because they themselves want to make sure that they actually are connected by blood, or if they're not, they want to at least give out that story. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case. And they're also just putting it in our faces now. And I'm really curious about this. When they show us that John McCain is related to Britney Spears, Hillary is related to Madonna, Celine Dion, and Angelina Jolie, and then they say that Obama's related to Brad Pitt, which I don't really believe, and then they're all related to George Bush, and then all of this goes back to Vlad the Impaler. And, you know, you can find this on the mainstream press. You can find it in Us Weekly and everywhere else.
That's right. They track it back to some of the pharaohs. And I think David Icke has done some work on this as well in regards to, the Bush-Clinton bloodline and tying into back to the Windsors. And from the Windsors, of course, all the way back through all these elite families to pretty much some of the pharaonic dynasties over in Egypt, pretty much.
Yeah, typically Ramses is the one that they use, that they say that they track back to, is Ramses II, who is the grandson of Akhenaten. So after Akhenaten died, then King Tut, his son, took over, And, of course, some think he was murdered because of the hole in the back of his skull. And then he was replaced by Ai, who was a first military takeover of Egypt. So Ai was more of the general who then became pharaoh. So it was more of a military dictatorship. But then you get Seti and Ramses that come into this picture. And it's also curious to note that Seti's tomb in Abydos is where you'll find that frieze where it shows a helicopter, an Apache helicopter, what seems to be the Phoenix space ship, mm-hmm. and also what could be Luke Skywalker's hovercraft. But you'll find this in the Seti's tomb at Abydos. And so this is the grandson of Akhenaten, and these are the ones that they connect to George W. Bush and the Bush line and the Clintons and the Windsors and all of that.
That's right. And then if you want to talk a little bit about this weird other connection that you found, which is really interesting, bringing up in the talk, in the DVD as well, about the kind of the fictional story, so to speak, that goes hand in hand as the real story is playing out. We have politics on one hand and we have entertainment on the other. And I'm talking about Stargate Atlantis and the relationship with the Obama administration. Tell us about that.
That was incredible. You know, I got to thank the Stargate fans for that one. I was busy looking deeper into Apophis, and I was actually looking for some, you know, when they titled Apophis, who had done this. I haven't gotten this all databased yet. I will release that soon. But so I was just searching around for Apophis, and I see an article that says Obama looks just like Apophis. And I'm thinking, you know, what's this? I didn't even know about the character in Stargate, but in the TV series SG-1, or Stargate Atlantis, actually, they have a nemesis that is known as Apophis. And this, of course, again, is the Satan of Akhenaten and also the name of the incoming asteroid. Well, it turns out that he's also the nemesis of Stargate 1, and he does look just like Obama.
Yeah.
So what had happened was then I started to go, okay, well, and also the people, the fans at Stargate Fans Forum are saying, okay, well, this guy looks like this guy, this guy looks like this guy. And it turns out that the entire Obama administration are identical, or nearly so. You know, these would be similar, whereas the others are identical. Everyone in the Obama administration, at least the main players. So Hillary Clinton looks just like the main lady from Stargate 1. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan, so I don't know their names. Bernanke is spitting image for one of the Atlanteans. And then you have Sarah Palin, who, of course, was governor of Alaska, where the HARP facility is, and the space-based weaponry, basically, you know, because that's what HARP is. Mm-hmm. She then, you know, got a higher calling, according to her Facebook, and left politics. But so then she's also represented in SG-1. And you'll see this picture. I don't have it on the blog right now, but I have it in the video, and I have it on my MySpace, where you can see that the Obama administration actually fit exactly into this SG-1 scenario. And so then we look into SG-1, you know, Stargate. This idea of Stargate, we go back to the movie and the idea that the pyramids were technological devices that were able to open a portal to another dimension or to another time or to another planet.
Yeah.
And that they were actually importing humans from Earth over to this other planet to mine it for this substance that they needed for their technology.
That kind of ties into something else that you also addressed and talked about. We know pretty much those who are in the alternative research field, so to speak, know about the main story that Sitchin and others put forth, that the Anunnaki pretty much came here to mine gold, the importance of gold and certain types of minerals, pretty much quartz, crystals. And there is this weird kind of an interesting tie into technology. We mentioned this on the show before about that computers use quartz crystals in on the motherboard and whatnot. And there's other stuff going on there as well. Do you think that this is a battle of minerals, or in some way kind of to try to amass the mineral wealth of the planet in order to actually rebuild a type of technology that actually could either teleport or open some kind of, well, Stargate then, I guess, or where do you see this is going, Freeman?
Okay, well, one of the best sources to get an idea of this technology is to look at Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods. That was one of my first in-depth studies into ancient architecture, although I had, you know, been to college for ancient architecture. I've been studying ancient astronauts all my life. But when you start to look at the images that Graham Hancock has in there and you start to see things that are anomalous, there's portions of rock that don't seem to have any purpose. There are things inside of the great gallery of the Great Pyramid that seem to be mechanical. Then you start to question these ideas of high technology. Of course, there's other things like the jets, the golden jets found in South America, or there was the airplane found in Egypt. I can't think of where that was at. Saqqara, the Saqqara airplane. So you will have all of these high-tech type devices that are represented in art. But yet, you know, we don't seem to have the high-tech devices in front of us.
Yeah.
And then you start to look at the pictures and you realize that, well, these structures, these ancient temples, actually look like giant computer chips being placed into the earth. And then you find that they have holes going down into the earth that seem to have no purpose but are filled with water, and there's an underwater river stream connecting them. So this is when you start to get the idea of global engineering, global electronics. So when we look at your basic computer, you will find that your quartz crystal is what generates your megahertz. So when they are putting a chip into a computer, they use a quartz crystal and they don't know what its vibratory speed is. So they make the chip and with the quartz crystal, and then they can check and find its vibration. And so, of course, they are seeking higher vibrations, larger crystals, different methods of crystals, even creating crystals in order to come up with a better computer. But when you start to take apart a computer, you realize that everything in it is subterranean. You've got your silicon, you've got your subterranean gases, your gold, your silver, mica, and then, of course, the quartz crystal. So everything in a computer is actually a subterranean technology or a subterranean material.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you start to look at things like, say, Tiahuanacan in South Mexico, in South America, you will find that they used this sheet of mica underneath the flooring. So it wasn't even used as decoration.
Yeah.
It's under the blocks. It's under the floor. Hmm. Now, what we use mica for is to cool our electronics.
Hmm.
So all of that you see your motherboard on, that's mica. And what had happened was that this sheet of mica in Tiahuanacan is too large for us to have moved in the 21st century. It is a very brittle substance, and the sheet is so large that it would have cracked if we had tried to move it. So we still don't even know how they got it there because it came from hundreds of miles away.
Hmm. That is really interesting.
Yeah, so you start to take these pyramids, not as monuments, not as tombs, because certainly they're not that, but as a giant computer device that was most likely put into place around 10,500 BC, if we're going to agree with Sitchin or Hancock or numerous other ancient or alternative historians that are showing that the pyramids are aligned to Orion at 10,500 BC.
Hmm.
So you have this type of grid that's been placed on the earth that is like a computer, and maybe they are trying to reactivate these things. And that was something I was covering with the Y2K ritual when they were trying to cap the Great Pyramid with gold using a head scientist from Jet Propulsion Laboratory and 33 Egyptian military that were then sank into the ocean in Flight 990. Mm-hmm. And then the capping of the Great Pyramid was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was thinking, are they trying to turn this thing on?
Yeah.
But if we're looking into the ideas of the Illuminati, the ideas of these Luciferians and their high-tech devices, then we need to go no further than CERN and CERN's corporate logo, which is, of course, a stylized 666 with a hyperdimensional portal. So what we have them working on, and if you realize that back in the Manhattan Project, you have a bunch of Kabbalists once again, because, you know, we got Einstein, and the different Jewish scientists that are working on breaking the atom. And so you start to realize that these were occultists as well that were doing creating the nuclear explosion, creating the destruction of the atom. Mm-hmm. Then we became more technologically advanced, and we began to reunify these particles. So we find that they are now trying to find a method of getting mass out of protons or photons, light. So we are turning light into mass.
That's right.
And they have accomplished that, only on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. But so now you add to that they're saying that they have this transference technology that are able to send a soul via radio frequency waves, and you got the heart facility. And then, of course, you need a gateway, which then you've come to CERN, which they are supposedly trying to determine the God particle. But what that really means is they're trying to understand what makes mass.
Yeah.
So you put all of these coupled together and include, of course, the grid. Many people forget that the grid was launched even when CERN wasn't. And the grid is the most high-tech internet ever created, 200,000 computers interlocked by dedicated fiber optic lines. And that they turned on. Now, the grid has the ability to generate holograms. It has the ability to generate sim worlds so that they can introduce all of our MySpace and Facebook data and create another internal world inside of the grid to try and determine what people will do. So the grid was launched, but CERN not, right? Because they ran into difficulties with their cooling system. But CERN then, of course, is to punch a hole in the other dimension. So you take all these things together. You destroy matter, you send it through, and then you recreate it on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's what I see going on, and I don't believe that any of these technologies are there for the benefit of humankind.
Well, I don't either, and it's interesting what you say. I think that the grid that you're talking about, this is primarily from, it's like a next generation of internet, and is it developed by CERN, you know, or is it
at CERN? It is not at CERN. It's split between a bunch of nations. Right now, I think they have 50,000 computers online. England is involved, America. I'd have to look that back up, really, but you just look into the grid.
Yeah.
But it's an international system that's just connected by dedicated fiber optics.
Yeah. But Freeman, also just imagine, if you will, for a second, the idea of all the freaking world's computers actually are already literally hooked up to one network. Let's say that at some point in time they decide to do some major computation or whatever, and if they manage to amass the all the computers in the entire world in order to help this process along, who knows what they're actually trying to do. I reckon whatever they're going to do, it needs an awful lot of computing power, because just as you say, if you want to put together a molecular structure that you've broken up on one end and want to put it back together at the other end, you need to calculate exactly where everything is at that, like in that microsecond, or to replicate it on the other end. And they could possibly be that why the reason that even have been why everyone needs a computer at home or what have you. We've paid for it, of course, you know. But it must be an incredible amount of computing power if you put all of those computers together that exist in the world, if you know.
Absolutely, and you better just take into account that apple, that bitten apple on your Macintosh, you know, that's a sign of Satan. And so constantly we can take this back to 666 or Satan, and I'm very curious about that, because I, like you, don't think of the Bible as a prophetic book. I think of it as a grimoire that has outlined a method. And so the idea that they keep encoding this in there, so Hitler's Volkswagen equals 666, you know, and you can go on with the CERN's logo looking like 666, Obama being lightning from heaven riding around in the beast. You know, why? And then the Macintosh, of course, with its bitten apple, which is the first sin. This is all or Firefox, right? We're talking and showing on Firefox. And the only word you can make in English is out of 666 is fox. Yep. And so what is your fire 666, right? And it's encompassing the earth, this 666. So this is the beast system, and it's actually civilization. It's not like the chip. It's not, it's not one particular thing inside the system, which is what everybody's problem is.
It's the beast system.
It is the system, yeah. Exactly.
That's right. I'm even reminded of the idea that old logo, at least, that old logo that Apple used was in that kind of rainbow color again, which shows that, you know, it's a refraction of light, it's a splitting up of light. We have the idea of fiber optics. They're bringing back again this Atlantean technology of working with light, working with crystals. We don't view it that way because we have another relationship to the technology we're using today. But actually, if you think about it, these more, you know, visions that we have of what the ancient Atlanteans were using, or we can even put it in the context of going back to Superman again, right? They and Kal-El and all these ancient gods in the Superman mythology, they used light and crystals as well to as their technology, pretty much. And we are doing that today as well, but we don't think about it that way.
Exactly. And take into consideration the names of those members of from Krypton, Jor-El, Kal-El. El is Lord in Hebrew, of course, and so we're talking about this Lord, and it you know, these things were, if you look into Tarzan, you look into Superman, Batman, you'll find all the Masonic Illuminati connections. I mean, Batman's grandfather is reputed to have started the Skull and Bones in the storyline. And then I tracked in the Sorcerers of Atlantis video how they had introduced this new era of Horus when we entered Y2K, that the whole celebration of Y2K was a celebration of Horus, where in England they burnt the Thames to the speed of the sun. They ignited the phalluses of the Eiffel Tower and the Washington Monument. And then then Bill Clinton comes out and says it is a rising sun.
Yeah, that's
so. This was the introduction into the idea of this this dark hero, the age of the dark hero, Horus, the avenging hero. And so at that point, they killed Superman. They had the big display of the death of Superman, and he was replaced by a robot and five other beings. He was actually split into multiples. And then Batman was killed off or had his back broken, and he was replaced by a character known as Azrael. And if you look into the Book of Enoch and you look into the fallen angels, which the number 66 or W actually is an encoding of, then the fallen angels, Azrael was the one who came and taught creating shields and warfare. And so Azrael takes over for Batman, Bruce Wayne, and he becomes this vicious slasher killer hero. And the public freaked out and they had to kill off Azrael and replace him back with Bruce Wayne. But you can see that whole Batman 2000. Check it out for yourself. I have the whole series. And you can watch this again and again. So Neo, you know, seems like a great hero, but he's a slasher killer. If you look into V for Vendetta, slasher killer, not only that, Fall Guy of the Illuminati, you know. And you start to look into who Guy Fawkes was. So they are programming us again. Like I say, they program us and then we create reality. And we are being programmed to be this slasher killer hero. And that's what they want from us now, so that we'll all kill each other. That's why millionaire patriots are giving away guns to everyone. And they're trying to make everybody angry with these type of mind games, saying that you can't grow an organic garden, but the Obamas can in the White House. You're all broke, but we're going to throw million-dollar parties with Jay-Z. You're all broke in England, but the MPs are stealing your money. They're starting to come out with the same thing here, saying the representatives are all stealing money. Well, yeah. Duh, they inherited this theft, you know? It's not like they came up with it. It's just time for you to know, because they need us angry. They need World War III. They need that to hit right now.
That is a very interesting point, and it kind of, I guess, a little bit ties in. We won't have time to talk about Phobos here a little bit later, but to briefly touch upon this idea about all the birth issue with Obama, what have you. You have this wonderful clip in the film where it pretty much shows anyone who is criticizing Obama, the way they're almost being, like, you know, lynched, mobbed in the streets these days. You know what I mean? It creates that weird kind of relationship as well between people. You don't have the right to speak up anymore, and there's anger at the same time as people are kind of happy that Obama is in. But as soon as you mention something about it and bring the birth certificate issue up or whatever it is, it's tremendous violence there as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see that in my Obama Satanic Youth. And I also have the clip of Alan Keyes, and calling Obama an abomination and, you know, no, he's not the president is what Alan Keyes is saying. Now, here's the main critical issue to this whole. Now we're seeing billboards going up in America saying, where's the birth certificate? We're seeing it on mainstream news. But what you can do is go to the Freeman perspective. You go to the Freeman TV, and you can see in 2006, I was saying that the next president would not be an American citizen because it was all part of the game plan. So, yeah, what they now have everybody doing is fighting them, fighting for them. And this is a lot on the same lines as the way the 60s was used. They use good to bring about evil. So in the 60s, everybody was united against the Vietnam War. They had a unified force. And so then they came in and said, well, what about the women? What about the blacks? What about the gays? And all of a sudden, all the unified forces were fighting each other.
Yeah.
And so they're very much the same here. They've got you going, where's his birth certificate? Well, I challenge you to ask why you have a birth certificate.
Yeah,
and I
right.
say, go check out Jordan Maxwell and maybe understand that you are owned and operated by a multinational corporation. You might rather question why you have a birth certificate than why Obama doesn't.
Well, that's a good point. A very good point. Okay, Freeman, let's talk a little bit about Phobos as well, the joint mission, I guess. Is it by, did you say Russia and China or Japan that is going to have a mission to one of Mars moons, Phobos, in 2010, is that right?
I have been looking for the date. Actually, it was supposed to launch this year. It's called the Phobos Grunt mission. And it is to launch satellites to the moon of Mars. Now, these moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos, are very curious and have been part of my study since way back because they are so curious. What happened was, now, we have had telescopes since 1605. We have been looking at Mars since that time. So for 200 years, up until 1877, no one had ever reported moons of Mars. The only time that you might find it is in, is it Finnegan's Tales? Only in fiction did there happen to be a mention of Mars having moons.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the astronomers have ever reported moons of Mars until 1877. And then at that moment, everyone saw the moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos. Now, Phobos and Deimos, that means fear and fright. So, you know, why did they title them that, right?
Yeah, that's interesting.
They came in, and now at this moment, 1877, that just happens to be the very same moment that they moved Cleopatra's Needle from Egypt to the Thames in London.
Really, no?
Yes.
Hmm.
So 1877, they put Cleopatra's Needle up there next to the Thames. I think it was in honor of the arrival of these moons.
Hmm.
Now, many people think that Phobos and Deimos are hollow. There have been tests that have been done, and due to their increasing speed, scientists believe that they are hollow.
Same as our moon, pretty much.
Exactly. And six satellites have been launched to Phobos, some American, mostly Russian. All have been lost. And the last Russian satellite to be taken out by Phobos, or whatever, took a video or a picture of a saucer-shaped craft.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, when the head scientist came out on this, they said, well, we didn't want to believe in the flying saucer story, but so far we have nothing better to say. But so six satellites going to Phobos have vanished. So there is something going on with Phobos. Now, you had mentioned, was it Edgar Mitchell?
It was Buzz Aldrin, actually, who did this
comment.
Buzz
Aldrin.
Yes. Comment about the pretty much the monolith that they found on Phobos. There is some really, really good photographs of this. I try to link that up so people can see as well. But unfortunately, he was kind of cut off by the host. It was featured on C-SPAN, a recent interview, because of, you know, all the Apollo 11 mission being, you know, 40 years old here, a couple of weeks ago, pretty much. And he was in studio doing an hour-long interview, and then all of a sudden at the end, pretty much, of the interview, he mentions this, that they've found, you know, people are going to begin to ask questions when they find that there is a monolith on Mars. Someone put it there, they put it there, or God put it there for us too. And then the host cut him off right there. So I haven't gotten any more on that, but it's interesting that he made a comment on it anyway. And the pictures out there, and it seems to actually be more of a, to me, a kind of a more of a pyramid shape than actually kind of a monolith or a square rectangular feature or structure. But something is on there, so if it's technology or whatever it might be, but it definitely looked like some kind of structure. So it's very interesting about Phobos.
Well, I'd almost wish that I had released this before that, because I don't want people to think that I was just copying Buzz Aldrin. I'm certain I've talked about it on my radio show a few times. The thing is that I have been anticipating this Phobos connection. Now, Buzz Aldrin just happens to be the one that brought back the Supreme Mother Council seal flag from the moon. So at the Temple of the 33rd in Washington, D.C., encased in glass, is the Supreme Council double-headed eagle flag that Buzz Aldrin brought back from the moon.
Mm.
So let's just keep that straight as well.
Yeah.
I've seen it myself, you know.
Yeah.
So what I am saying, and I guess what also Buzz is saying, is that this launch to Phobos, which is scheduled, I believe, for 2011. I've been trying to confirm the timing, but they're not releasing anything. You know, they have to determine weather and you know, proper launch status and all that. But it was supposed to launch this year, and so I was expecting the Phobos story to connect in with the Obama story. Mm-hmm. But they postponed the launch till 2011, as far as I can tell so far.
Well, I'm looking at the Wikipedia here. It says here, at least, that it's scheduled for launch in October 2009, which is the same window of time where they're going to bomb the moon and all that stuff as well. And it says that if they miss this launch because of whatever, they might do an alternative in 2011. But anyway, they expect the vehicle to return in 2012. That's what Wikipedia says right now about it.
Okay, so they are, so we're looking at the same time of the bombing of the moon.
Pretty much, yep.
Very curious, very curious.
Indeed.
So what I am saying is that this satellite, the Phobos Grunt mission, the Russian-China alliance, who have been far more open on their disclosure, are going to release the data showing ancient civilizations of humans on Mars. And this is going to open the whole disclosure project. This is going to open everything. I believe disclosure will come from Phobos.
That is interesting. So, and do you think that they've chosen this as the timing reference as well, around 2011, possibly 2010, depending on when it actually will arrive then, which reminds us of the Arthur C. Clarke novel again, 2010, the year we make contact, right?
Yes. You know, these guys, you know, you look at H.G. Wells, Aldous Huxley, Blair, who is also known as Orwell.
That's right. George Orwell.
You know, these guys were all involved. They were all in Tavistock. They were all in these ancient, mind pattern programming collectives. So they were aware of these technologies. They were aware of these abilities. There's no way they came that close. And, you know, with H.G. Wells' book on the New World Order and the things that he has outlined, we know that they're involved.
Yeah.
So Arthur C. Clarke, I would absolutely put him in that same boat. The release of this information, the pre-programmed release of information. Sometimes I wonder if we really do create reality as a hologram and they have to, you know, put this into us. But
it seems like it, right?
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The more and more you look at this, the crazier life comes. But I do believe in the holographic universe, and that makes a lot more sense.
That would just to interject that would actually explain why then they need to put out certain things in the mainstream, because again, for all we know, they could just be doing this all under the radar, but it seems to be some kind of collaboration with us. They need our at least unconscious attention or intention there as well to help manifest certain things in reality, in life, at Earth level, so to speak. I don't know, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, you know, we got to keep these thoughts open. That's the thing, you can't be afraid to ponder. And that's what's happened to our society today, is we've been conditioned to not question. And so therefore, patriots will come over to my website as I'm talking about this political campaign to start World War III using the idea of the president not being a natural-born citizen. They come to my website and see that I'm saying that the president may be a clone of an ancient pharaoh, and they're like, oh, you know, they can't even go there.
Yeah.
Our imagination has been captured, which is Disney's motto. And, you know, I have a picture of Wernher von Braun with Walt Disney. It all ties in together. You know, this is all one big story.
Freeman, I want to ask you here a little bit in the last couple of minutes we have about some of the stuff you have more in your film, of course, but the Bicentennial Mall, if we talk about how things in reality or on this plane manifests itself and how the magicians, as you call them, of Atlantis, the sorcerers of Atlantis are manifesting certain monuments here on Earth in regards to architecture, sound, frequency. You went to the Bicentennial Mall in Nashville, and you hooked up with William Henry over there as well, didn't you?
Yes, and I'm hoping he's not too upset with me. Him and Whitley Strieber were working on a film about the Bicentennial Mall, or at least they were in discussions about it. And so he had actually not allowed me to interview his tour of this Bicentennial Mall. Mm-hmm. Now, me and him, we have some differing ideas on how this all goes because he has a more of a favorable view of the Atlanteans than I do. So when I started to look at the picture, now, first of all, you just take the structure, the Bicentennial Mall, which is the Capitol Mall in front of the Nashville Capitol. It was a multi-million-dollar extravaganza, which they actually asked Paul Laffoley, the Twin Tower architect that I interviewed, who is a Kabbalist magician, to design it. But Paul Laffoley refused because the guy, he said, seemed like an ass. So he turned down that job because he seemed this guy wanted to have a specific type of magic being instilled there. Now, like I say, Paul Laffoley is a Kabbalist magician, an architect that designs time machines. You can go check out his interview with me. And he was asked to build this Bicentennial Mall. So we know it's a Kabbalistic device because they're seeking this. But when you take it and you put this structure and just look at the picture of the outline of the structure and you set it right next to King Solomon's seal to bind spirits. Now, a lot of people don't realize and understand that the Bible is filled with magic. It's filled with this concepts of sorcery and magic. And people say that the Bible's against witchcraft. Well, look into King Solomon. Find out that he was a worshiper of Molech. He was a worshiper of Asherah and of, I can't think of the other one, but it's in the film. So you'll find that he is this Kabbalist magician, and what most of the magic that we deal with today is actually Solomonic magic. And then you look into the Freemasonry, and of course it all ties back to Solomon. You go to Sir Francis Bacon's New Atlantis, and of course they're meeting at the House of Solomon. He flips the O and the A. It's the same story. When you look into in Exodus, when Moses and Aaron are fighting with the Egyptian Pharaoh, they are dueling magicians there, you know, calling out plagues of this and plagues of that. And you'll realize actually that all of the plagues that Moses deals with the Egyptian magicians are the same ones that we're dealing with today. They had the plague of blood, which we'd call HIV. They had the plague of livestock, which we'd call mad cow. And you can actually follow the plagues that they created in the Exodus story as the same plagues we're dealing with today. So don't, you know, you realize that these biblical patriarchs, these kings were practicing this ancient magic. And Solomon had managed to bring 72 demons out of the ether, as it were, and then bind them with magical seals. And the final seal to bind them all, or the one ring to rule them all, because it is encompassed in a ring, is the exact shape of this Bicentennial Mall.
Really? No.
Absolutely. I've taken the two pictures and composed them together so that you can see that there are even lines that go across this sigil, and you'll see that these are the exact locations of that large black earth and also the exact location of the other cross arm, which symbolizes the breakup of America or the Civil War. So there are only two places on this structure that are broken. There's a black granite wall that outlines the sigil. And so the only place where is it broken are the same places that are broken on the seal of Solomon to bind these 72 spirits. Now, underneath this Bicentennial Mall, and it says so right there on the black granite wall, there are thousands of bodies interred. So this seal of Solomon to bind spirits sits on top of a Native American burial ground binding these spirits.
Oh, God. Jeez.
And then the entire structure is sonic. It's a frequency modulation device, which is a guitar, right? You understand a guitar is a frequency right. modulation device. So this it has an amphitheater down at the base of the structure with seven portals that open up into in line with this structure. And at the end, they have what's called a carillion, which is 25 foot columns that surround a circle, and in the center of this circle is three pentagrams, which are each 15 foot wide. And each of these pentagrams, or the stones making the colored pentagrams, which are red, white, and blue granite, which are infused again with quartz crystal. So we're back to this concept of the quartz in the computer. Now, in the center of the pentagram, when the three of them come together, which make up the symbol of the Titans, which, of course, is the Nashville sports team, and we're back to the gods again, they have an iron post going into the center of the pentagrams. So when you stand on that iron post in the center with the 50 columns surrounding you, every word or every sound, every sonic vibration reverberates completely right back to that center location. So if you were to step off out of the pentagrams, then you would no longer get an echo out of these columns. And you can go watch this in my film on YouTube called Esoteric Adventures in Nashville. And we're actually going to start a new TV show based on Esoteric Adventures. And that's what I'll be working on wholeheartedly here very soon, along with the release of my picture book, The Sorcerers of Atlantis. I should probably start finding new titles. You know what I do is I release things before I'm done with them, because I think they're so important. Like, and also I'm an artist and I just want people to see it.
Yeah.
But I release things before I'm really done with them. But I want to announce this book that should be released in the next month that I will be having out. And it is all of my artwork with explanations. And I now have an agent and everything ready to go. So the Sorcerers of Atlantis book is finally going to be published.
There you go.
It has taken me, 4 years. But it is now ready to go.
Oh, good news. So everybody keep an eye on freemantv.com for more information about that. And, again, I want to just backtrack a little bit here and talk about the Bicentennial Mall or the State Park again. It seems to be trouble finding some kind of just basic information about actually who became the architect after, what's his name again? He turned it down.
Paul Laff.
Paul Laffoley. Yeah, that's right. He turned it down. Do you know who actually built it finally, the architect?
No, I don't.
Can't find anything on that either. It's interesting. Yeah. And they have it, as you said, this black kind of earth. They have a black sphere spinning on top of water. Is this at the top of this? Because it looks like, if you look from it from above or a blueprint of it, it looks like a pyramid in a way. It's kind of shaped like a needle or something like that. And is the earth at the top of this, or where is the earth placed?
That is over on the left-hand side at the second breakaway. So it's more towards the top. It's closer to the carillion circular big top. Like, it looks like a keyhole, if you imagine an ancient keyhole. So you've got the top keyhole and then a flared out. So it's closer to the top of the keyhole. And what it has is very interesting is you've got this 16,000-pound black or granite earth floating on an eighth of an inch of water. And, of course, you can see the sun deep within it, so it's kind of the coated sun within the sun. Now, this whole part of this structure was put up by the Germans, and, of course, we understand their concept of the black sun or the second sun, which all goes back to the Freemasonry and the mystery schools of the second sun. So it was placed there by German architects. That much I got from William Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And then what it has is these giant monoliths that sit out in front of it, and they say, like, victory, and they show an atomic explosion at Hiroshima. And so each of the monoliths is etched with warfare, and then the entire structure is surrounded by holly trees or Hollywood, which is, of course, the magical wand of the magician.
Yes. Oh, really interesting. And do you have the acoustic thing with the bells as well, right? Does it play a specific melody? Did you ever stay long enough to hear that, what they actually
yes.
play?
Yes, you can actually hear that in my video, The Esoteric Adventures in Nashville. And also Elvis is at the capstone of this device. They have all the Nashville stars and
another,
Elvis.
Another king, huh?
Yes, exactly. And it is in due relationship to the Masonic Temple as well. You'll find that a lot of times when they build these type of devices, they'll actually point directly towards either a capital or a Masonic Temple. So this one in the Nashville Temple is huge and just crazy. I got lost on what we were covering.
We're talking just a bit more about the Black Earth, and I guess more in general, just of what the device.
Oh, well, the music. Yeah.
The music part, exactly. Maybe you can also just comment briefly on what you think ultimately the device actually is doing. Is it bringing in some kind of force or energy, or is it more about exuberating this on the planet? Or what do you think the purpose or use of the mall actually is?
Like I say, the Seal of Solomon that it represents is a seal to bind spirits. You will find this in a form of magic known as Goetia.
Yes.
And Goetia is a magic that Aleister Crowley even said was beyond his working. He didn't want to touch it. He said it was such a base magic that it was below him, beneath him to even touch. So we're looking at Goetic magic, a way of controlling demons. Now, I'll tell you another one of my little theories and thoughts was that when they bombed, and I do believe it was a missile that hit the Pentagon, was to open this seal for Leviathan. That this the Pentagon was actually another ancient sigil, because, of course, it is just a pentagram, to bind this other Leviathan. And I believe that they may have blown a hole in the seal in order to open the path for Leviathan. But when we start to get to these ideas, it gets very, you know, we don't have enough data in our heads to understand this. I do study the grimoires. I do study the Goetia magic to try and get an idea. And then I listen to people like Dr. Stephen Greer saying they have electromagnetic devices that are able to send you into this lower density. So that's what I see, is that, okay, if we look at the idea that we had a spirit on this planet and that spirit was taken over, so there was this life force or chi that, what the Egyptians called a ka, a life force essence that the Atlanteans, who I believe are the Martians, the Aryans, right, or Aries being Mars, came to the Caucasian Mountains, to the Caucasus Mountains, to then take over planet Earth after creating this great catastrophe. Then they had to reestablish a vibrational state to keep people binded so that we did not have our spiritual powers that we had when we were Lemurians. So what you find in the story of Lemuria is a power that these people had that was almost like instant karma. So whenever the Atlanteans attacked the Lemurians, they would just drop dead, because anything they tried to do came back on them tenfold. And we all understand this karmic type idea, but we don't have the power anymore. So when you start to understand the colonizers or the Caucasians, as they go and take over these many nations, what they have done is killed off the indigenous tribes. And they have killed off the indigenous belief systems. Now, my personal belief is that these tribes, us, and some of the, these indigenous tribes had this spirit power that is now being taken over and was, you know, ultimately dwindled in 10,500 BC, but yet was still there. So when we watch the colonization, we watch as they eliminate these indigenous tribes and this indigenous spirit and what we could call the Gaia force. And so what I feel that the Bicentennial Mall is, being that it's sitting on top of a Native American burial ground, is to quell this spirit. Because now I went with the Mayans to their winter solstice celebration at the pyramids of Tikal, and I went to the Mayans ritual at San Pedro where they were making contact with their ancestors. And this is what they would do to keep that spirit alive, to keep the force going. So I feel like that's what they've been doing. That's why they got rid of the Montauk Indians. And you look into the Montauk story and Thomas Jefferson, and you'll find a very intriguing story. I think Cameron wrote that one. Pyramids of Montauk. Look into that. You will find that they are trying to kill off this spirit, this energy, this force that we all have within us. They have usurped it with money and religion and other mental techniques for us, the Caucasians. But the ancients, they still had it in their very spirit. And so that's what I feel that that device is to do, is to bind that power of love.
Hmm. That is a very interesting theory. It feels like when you're describing that, it's pretty much explaining like where we're dealing with an invasion, a very kind of slow, incremental, you know, colonization of the original inhabitants of this planet, possibly then, and they need to do it at a slow pace, because probably what will end up happening is that if we were to awaken to the fact what actually is going on, we would probably have the power. Well, I think we would have the power to throw them off and to subvert this, the goal that they have. But they're probably clever enough then to keep it on a very, very slow pace, so to speak, in order to actually continue their agenda. Otherwise, they'll be gone. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, we could change the world in an instant simply by changing our mind, by simply disbelieving what they're telling us, by simply disbelieving in the... Okay, if you watch how they keep this whole thing going, you go into any of your shopping stores and you'll see Hannah Montana and Star Wars. You'll find that on every aisle. Hannah Montana, Star Wars. Hannah Montana, Star Wars. Or else princesses, Disney princesses, and Star Wars. Disney princesses and Spider-Man. This is the Princess Warrior programming. Now, first, they teach you over and over again, save the princess. So that keeps the monarchy going. Look at Hannah Montana, and she is the best of both worlds. And so, therefore, you got the idea of the lowly us and the elite. So they keep that programming going, and then you've got the warrior, or Star Wars, and that's the man who has to go out to kill to make sure that she gets her bubblegum cell phone. So the Princess Warrior programming is something that is constantly being programmed through Disney, through Target, Walmart, and every other store. I have yet to find a Hannah Montana free zone. And that's how they keep this whole thing going, is through the programming of our children and Princess Warrior programming, which keeps instilled the idea of the elite and then the lowly us.
Keep on rocking, Freeman. It's awesome having you back again for an update from the Freeman perspective. I want to mention everybody to keep an eye out then for the upcoming book, Sorcerers of Atlantis. And the Obama DVD is available now, of course, on freemantv.com. Thank you very much for coming on again, Freeman. Let's do it again soon.
You got it, Henrik.
That's our program with Freeman. We are going to be back on Sunday with Catherine Austin Fitz on the swine flu scam, vaccination, and the economy. Further ahead, we have Philip Willan Anthony from We Are Change Ireland with more important information about the Lisbon Treaty and what you can do to help stop it. We have Rand Flamouth, Bob Dean, Dominic Orbeck on reptilian marketing versus the heart-brain model with us. We're also going to talk with Tessa Dick, the wife of sci-fi author Philip K. Dick, and MEP Marta Andreasen on her book Brussels Laid Bare. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Radio, for subscribing, and for keeping your ears and eyes open. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth. Take good care, and we'll be back soon.